Hello and welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome to today's program Matthew Menner, who is Senior Vice President of Strategic Account Management at Transplace. And today we're going to talk about taking the long view, the state of the transportation market. Now, you know, we're almost just a couple of weeks away from the end of Q1 2016, and you know, depending on how you look at the different indexes that are out there and different analysts and everything else, you might get some mixed signals in terms of what's happening with the transportation market. Either it's you know, steady growth, or it's a shipper's market, or you know, things are moving in the wrong direction. So you know, a lot of different interpretations of what's going on. And certainly, it's great to have with us Matt Menner on the program today. Obviously, he's in the front lines of this in his role at Transplace, talking to both shippers as well as carriers. And it's got a long and great history in the transportation industry. So great to get his perspective on what he's seeing and hearing out of the marketplace. And more importantly, what should shippers be doing about it or thinking about, you know, in the weeks and months ahead. So great to have Matthew on the program. I just want to remind those of you that are joining us live today that part of our goal here at Talking Logistics is to make this conversational. So if you do have a question for Matt as we're having our conversation here, you can do so via the submit a question button. And I'll keep an eye on it. If it's a good and appropriate question, I'll certainly add it into the conversation. So with that, Matt, welcome to the program.
Adrian, thanks very much. Pleasure to be here.
Now, Matt, it's hard to believe that, you know, you and I know each other for many, many years, yet this is your first time on Talking Logistics. So I don't know how you avoided that for so long. But, you know, one of the things I like to do when I have a guest on for the first time is to give our viewers, you know, a little bit of a perspective in terms of where our guest comes from, you know, their experience, so on and so forth. So kind of before we dive into the topic at hand, why don't you briefly tell us a little bit about your career path, you know, how and why you got involved in supply chain logistics and what your current role and responsibilities are there at Transplace.
Great, Adrian. Thanks. And I think I've been relatively stealth in trying to avoid this until today. So you've done a good job in finally lassoing me in here. But it is a pleasure to be here, and we as Transplace deeply appreciate the opportunity to support your efforts. How I got into this, my father, you know, rest his soul, gave me a Jane's Container Ships of the World book is the 1980 version of that. So I would have been 13 years old, 12 years old or so. And, you know, to some extent that started me down this kind of path of fascination with big machines that move stuff. And then I saw a truck early in my college career and thought, well, that's kind of fascinating. I should study that a little bit more. And one thing led to another. I've been in the industry for my entire professional career since 1990. I started with, St. Johnsbury Trucking Company and went back to graduate school. I did a fantastic internship at the Burlington Northern Railroad. I went to work out of graduate school for Accenture's logistics strategy practice, and then went to work for a series of companies, primarily in the technology space for applied to transportation, large math models for trucking company operations, the first optimization-based bidding routine for transportation, truckload transportation sourcing. And those four or so companies ultimately ended up as Manhattan Associates. Did a brief stint in inventory optimization with Optient, and been here at Transplace for just shy of 10 years at this time. So fantastic career. Love this industry. Love the people that make this industry go. And I find it a pleasure to come to work every day. So at Transplace, I work for the president of the business. I am responsible for strategic account management. And in Transplace's definition, that is, it's really reduced to three simple words: satisfaction, retention, and growth of our 140 contract logistics TM managed transportation services customers that have awarded us, trusted us to be their network operator for their business. So that's my job, and I would say that on any average day, it keeps me relatively busy. So thanks again for being here and the opportunity to speak with you today.
Yeah, no, great career path there. I think you're the exception to most of our guests, where most of our guests kind of landed into, you know, supply chain logistics after starting their career, you know, elsewhere, but really kind of getting the bug, or at least the interest, that, you know, being a teenager with your dad, I think that is, that's kind of unique. And, but I think you also bring, you know, a breadth of experience that some of our guests have also brought, you know, not only in the, operator world, whether it's in the railroad or trucking industry, but consulting, software, technology. So I think, I think that's one of the neat things with some of our guests that are able to provide that kind of broad perspective, because you've kind of been in the front lines from all those fronts. So let's get into the topic now and start with kind of a simple question that may not be so simple, you know, to answer. And that is, you know, how would you characterize, you know, the current state of the transportation market, especially when it relates to, you know, rates and capacity out there?
So great question, one that we discuss on a daily basis. We as Transplace now, certainly given some the past number of years of success, manage, we have freight under management of about $6.5 billion on behalf of those 140 or so customers. We buy directly about $1.6 billion a year in the market as the contracting entity with carriers, predominantly North American surface transportation modes. And, you know, we continue to see it be an exceptionally favorable market for shippers at the current time. You know, we would love to see rampant volume growth. That would be a good thing for us as, you know, as American citizens and, you know, and all the other good things that, that strong economic growth would bring to all of us at this point. We're not yet seeing that. Our customers are not seeing that. We serve four core vertical markets primarily. Consumer packaged goods, diversified manufacturing, process industries, chemical, and then retail, typically on the front end of the supply chain, suppliers to distribution centers. And without question, we continue to see the manufacturing and process industries down year over year in terms of shipment volume. So one could construe from that, you know, are we, you know, at the onset of or nearing some sort of, you know, manufacturing recession at this point as demand softens? We see increasing amounts of volume actually accumulating in our customers' distribution center, which leads us also to believe that that demand continues to be soft, right? So favorable time for a shipper that is in the market sourcing transportation services to move their product from or their supplies, their raw material, direct material into manufacturing facilities, transfers, and certainly out to their customers.
Right. Well, you know, those of us that have been in the industry for a long time, you know, we know that this market is always, you know, cyclical, right? So what may be now kind of a shipper's market, if you will, can quickly turn into a carrier's market, you know, down the road. You know, and obviously, let's start with the shipper's perspective. I mean, you mentioned you work with a lot of shippers, a lot of different industries. I mean, how are they responding, you know, to this environment when they see these signals that you talked about? I mean, are they putting their freight out to bid? Are they kind of taking a wait and see attitude? I mean, what are some of the actions that they're taking, and what do you see as the leaders doing?
Yep, great question. The majority of our customers, and certainly those that we support directly, have long ago moved to an annual cadence with respect to bidding their freight, right? So, you know, seldom do we see where a customer has not developed that type. I mean, that's applied best practice at this point, right? Kind of across the modes, you do a bid, you reset to market, right? You might be plus or minus market based on your operational requirements, your service requirements by your customer, so on and so forth. But that's not a net new movement, right? We continue to see bid activity. We continue to see it be favorable in terms of savings to the shipper. You know, one could say at softening of rates, and you know, and that means a reduction in potential revenue for the carrier. But we do not see our customers by and large taking the long view, right? They know exactly how fickle this industry is, and how quickly it can turn. We were 18 months ago, right? We were in a carrier market, right? And carriers were putting up the best earnings, the best operating ratios, best top line revenue growth that they'd seen in you know, the better part of a decade. So quickly the tables turn. I think the smart shipper, the savvy shipper, the leader, if you will, is taking the long view. They're trying to do a little bit of clawback, right? They themselves have stakeholders, shareholders, and bosses. They have budgets and operating plans that they need to align to and deliver against. But they also know that without question, with the average age of the over-the-road truck driver at 49 years of age, right, with government consensus saying that we're probably just shy of 900,000 short in the long run as we look at the stacked effect of pending regulation, pending into effect, yet to take full effect, and on the books to potentially be introduced. You just got a grant. You have an accelerated graying workforce there that, you know, you're going to need somebody to drive those trucks, right? And, you know, the autonomous vehicle is some time off. I think there are lots of people that think that that holds the great next, you know, wave of productivity here. I think so. I think we'll see that in our lifetimes here, in our professional careers. But it will be hard fought, and, you know, that's not the answer, right? There's about 20 things that need to take place in order for there no longer to be a shortage of drivers. So the smart shipper taking the long view, trying to potentially realign back close to market, what is defined as currently competitive market rates based on their freight network and their freight characteristics, and deliver against their corporate objectives and their budgets and their responsibilities, their fiduciary responsibilities. But we're not seeing the smart shipper come in and feel like it's an opportunity to take mass gains back and potentially suffer the long-term consequences of such actions at this point. So,
well, I think you just probably answered in part what was going to be my next question. So, I mean, you talked about taking the long view, perhaps being kind of what leading shippers are doing and kind of being a best practice, if you will. I mean, what's probably the biggest mistake that a shipper can do today? Is it kind of taking that short-term view and saying, hey, we're gonna put out a reverse bid out there and try to get, you know, the lowest rates possible right now? I would assume that obviously would be the one extreme.
I think that would probably be the worst possible stance that a shipper could take at this point, right? The carriers themselves have applied a level of mathematics, optimization routines, activity-based costing models to their operations that we've not seen in the previous 10 years, right? So they understand who are their preferred shippers, who do good work with them, who value their resources and assets, their driver, their equipment, their trailing equipment, their power, and they're the ones that they want to do the business with. And without question, the profitability of that freight comes into direct consideration as they determine, you know, how they allocate those finite resources, whose freight they want to haul. I had the fortune of moderating a panel at RILA 2 weeks ago in Dallas. And I had two carriers on there, J.B. Hunt and Warner, both very, very technically sophisticated carriers, and two shippers, two very technically sophisticated and savvy shippers with Target and with Home Depot. And, without question, they all talked about the long view. They all talked about partnership. They all talked about the importance of understanding, operational inefficiencies that existed on both sides of the equation and how they effectively did root cause analysis to drive that out. And both of the carriers were more than forward enough to share their relative scorecards, fictitious with data, but you certainly could understand how they were looking at the shipper's business with a level of financial and mathematical acumen that, you know, that did not exist 20 years ago. So the right shipper wants to take the long view. The right carrier wants to take the long view. And, Transplace, we work, tirelessly day in and day out on behalf of our customers, the beneficial freight owners, and certainly without question, our key suppliers, the carriers, in order to make certain that we are driving out those efficiencies and that our customers and certainly ourselves are looked at as someone that they want to partner with on a long-term basis.
Now, I recently wrote a post kind of related to this topic in terms of how, shippers should respond, to this environment. And I recall a situation a few years ago where we were kind of in a similar environment and, manufacturer had the opportunity to, literally save millions of dollars on their freight if they put it right back out to bid. But they decided to kind of remain, maintain their current, rates and contracts with their carriers. But it took a lot of discipline, right? Because, I mean, if you're getting, pressure from your CFO and your CEO to kind of continue to squeeze, costs out of your operations and find ways to do that, and that opportunity is sitting there. And I would, I think a similar type of thing would be on the carrier side if there's an opportunity to, increase rates or so forth when the market swings in the other direction. Do you see that really it does take some discipline and perhaps some support from upper management, to be able to truly take the long-term view?
I agree without question. It takes that on both sides. The savvy shipper needs to be able to position themselves and make a case to their executive leadership that the prudent approach is the long view. I think that there are there are benchmarking capabilities in the marketplace. Transplace is a very aggressive one, actually, on both sides, a very, very established capability with in terms of rate line haul rate, as well as probably one of the most expansive accessorials, right, looking specifically at additional line costs to the freight movements. And there are munitions, if you will, that the leadership of the shipper can take forward to their chief financial officer to make the case that we are at and or near market. You know, certainly we can do alignment. You know, we have a lot, you see lots of shippers that are specifically focused on aspects of their network, maybe not the entire network. If they feel that they're highly competitive, why drive, you know, or they're market competitive, why drive the risk in inherent change in a routing guide if the business is running well at this point. So I think that the capable shipper that understands their business and understands the market, either through their own experience firsthand, their networks, their relationships, these additional third-party data sources that are available, content sources that are available, they're making the case to their executive leadership around the right choice, and not to go, potentially allow the, you know, strategic sourcing people to come in and see this just as another commodity that, you know, in a depressed market where supply exceeds demand at the current time, you know, fundamental economics, you know, it's time to go for the jugular, right? Which could have lasting effect, because at the end of the day, you can make a fantastic product, but unfortunately, if you can't move the raw material into the manufacturing facility or the finished product to the customer, you got a fantastic product that's sitting in the middle of nowhere. So.
Right. Now you touched upon, with your experience at the RILA conference, provided some insight there on kind of the carrier perspective of the market, but maybe just to elaborate a little bit more on that. I mean, what other things are you hearing from carriers in terms of the current market environment and how they're responding? And maybe you can weave that into something you also mentioned. You mentioned the phrase preferred shipper, which is something that for the past few years you hear a lot of, you know, folks talking about it. And you've done, you know, Transplace has done some research in this area with your customers and your partners. So, I mean, what has that research, you know, told you, and, you know, how does that relate with what carriers are doing and responding in this market environment?
Yeah, so it seems now that because there is an overabundance of available capacity at this point, one of the measures of our efficacy of our operations and the routing guides that we help our customers source, or our customers source themselves directly, is our primary tender accept, right? So as we develop the routing guide and determine which carrier is going to haul what loads on what lanes, we are seeing our routing guides and our customers' routing guides performing at the highest level that we've seen in many, many years, right? So which leads us to believe that the carriers are anxious for freight, right? Which is great. It to some extent makes the sledding a little easier at the current moment, making up for the sledding of 18 to 24 months ago, right? We are still seeing shippers, I think, still continue to ask, you know, what do I need to do in order to improve my overall attractiveness as a shipper? Because again, this market will swing, right? There will be a change, right? The shippers on the panel specifically cited examples of initiatives that they'd undertaken in terms of just receiving processes, gate check-in and check-out processes, the ability for more timely and effective yard checks of the trailing equipment of the carrier to determine what's empty, what's loaded, focus on driver amenities to some extent, but, you know, that's something that we've all talked about and focused on for years. Transplace is, we're kind of into our second version of shipper of choice, specifically directed by our customer advisory board, who you've had the pleasure of interacting with in the past. And, we've looked at it from a carrier's perspective. Initially, we went out and polled 250 carriers to understand, to attempt to drive some normalization around, you know, what does this term mean? You know what I mean? From the supplier standpoint, from the carrier standpoint. And we got some really good data, I think, that, and very, very candid insights. I don't think any of us were surprised by what they said. At the end of the day, respect my number one resource, my number one asset, which is my driver. Help me focus on efficiency, right? I want to get in and get out. Do not detain me. Treat my driver with respect. Provide me a competitive rate. Provide me competitive fuel surcharge, and pay me in a timely and efficient manner, right? I mean, I'm giving you the high level view of these things. After that, we presented that to our customers. They actually said, help us to understand what I get for that, right? If I do those things, if I score at the high end of the curve, what does that mean quantitatively? Does that mean I get an extra 20% surge capacity at a constant routing guide rate when all of a sudden my Atlanta facility is producing additional product that needs to move in the network? You know, does that keep me out of a deadhead compensation situation with a carrier? Does that keep me off of the going to the second, third, fourth carrier that's got a cost spread associated with it? Does that keep me off of the spot? We have worked diligently with a smaller work group, specifically a number of our customers and probably some of our closest carrier partners, to better understand what the quantification of that benefit is. I will tell you, it remains a little fuzzy math, right? So, the shipper's looking for an absolute figure, a sum, a percentage, a number, right? And the carriers are looking for, a more directional understanding or a directional representation or a definition of what that means to the carrier if they're looking to bank on something. So it's, I would say the work is not done. I don't know if we've just run up against the challenge of one party not wanting the other party to be fully aware and disclose, right? We continue to work on it. And as you know, we continue to invest meaningful effort in terms of further defining what preferred shipper means or shipper of choice and helping our customers think through it. Our engineering services team led by Ben Cubitt has done a great job of developing a functional checklist, right? You know, kind of think of it as a health diagnostic, if you will. And we welcome the opportunity to share that with any of the viewers today and as they look at their own operations and determine, how am I ranking, right? And it's kind of a standard to gap and then potential actions that they could take to remedy that, to get back, to close the gap, if you will. So.
Yeah, no, great insights there. I think one of the important things of these types of efforts is that to me, where I see the greatest value is that it gets both sides talking, right? It gets both sides to talk about what's important to them, right? And then, as you said, then what does that mean, right? So if we're able to reach common ground on the things that are important to each other, how do we mutually benefit, right? And how do we create that win-win opportunity when, the exceptions occur, right? Because I think that's always the challenge, right? When we can agree on a game plan, but we all know, especially in transportation, things are going to change, whether it's, volumes are going to go up or they're going to go down, or weather or driver issues, regulations, so on and so forth. So I think, to me, when I see these efforts, like what you've been doing, it's really about getting the conversation started and continuously engaged to really try to understand, both sides and understand how you can reach, common ground there. I want to, touch upon something you've already talked about a little bit here, and that's the impact on, of the driver shortage or regulations, such as, the electronic logging, mandate. Depending on who you ask, either those things are going to have, significant impact on transportation operations, or, it's just a lot of noise and hype. I can't tell you how many times I talked to some shippers and they said, gosh, I've been in the industry for 30 years and every one of those 30 years there's a driver shortage and we still get stuff out and, the market continues to hum. So what's different today, right? So, I mean, is there a consensus view, when you talk to shippers and carriers around what impact regulations and driver shortage may or may not have moving forward?
So there's, by no stretch of the imagination, is there consensus, right? It's almost a function of the shipper and their sources of data, what they're reading and what they're believing, right? And I think that most parties, all of us involved, have, by and large, have a kind of a pure intent, right? There is, we're all trying to educate, each other in terms of the potential downstream implications of these things. I've heard, people have said 3-5%, ELD, a large percentage of the owner operators coming out before 17's done, right? Because they're going to hang it up, right? That population is older. They do not want to go through the meaningful change management learning curve, if you will, from going from a paper log to a, to an electronic device, but then if you go out there and this as well as I do, you'll go out there and there are so many companies now that have now sprouted to develop applications on your smartphone to allow you to become effectively ELD compliant, right? So, and providing on almost a load by load basis, a solution, right? So, I'm not convinced, my 89-year-old mother has a smartphone and is very adept at using it, right? So I'm not convinced that if you are a 55-year-old owner operator, you've done this for 30 years, you've got a smartphone and you want to continue to drive, that all of a sudden you're going to get out of the business because of this. Now, you might have a fundamental problem with the fact that now the government is really watching you, you know what I mean? And that, that's a personal issue, right? You know what I mean? But I think that there's a white space that many startups have rushed to fill, which is provide, an easy to use, intuitive application on your smartphone at a very nominal price to allow you to become compliant with the governmental requirements, right? So I'm not quite certain how it'll all shake out. I think I'm more fundamentally, personally, I'm more concerned about, what are the inflow strategies? How do we grow the pool of drivers, right? The retirement will always happen, right? There will always be attrition, right? Local economy comes back, people are going to go find a trade job. They're not going to want to drive over the road. But, is it a combination of wage, respect, quality of life, reasonableness of a healthy lifestyle while you're on the road, right? And then also I think it's to some extent is how do we look at the population that is coming up that are not destined for college, that are potentially destined for a trade job, and how do we make this an attractive life? CARE's been working on this for years, right? There's the military recruitment aspect of it. There are great carriers out there that provide, the company driver the opportunity to actually lease and ultimately purchase their own equipment and become an independent owner operator, contracted back to that carrier. So there's lots of strategies here to try and, the carriers, this is a core problem to them, right? They're not going to have labor to, to run their businesses. So I think that, looking at the front end, looking at how do we grow the inflow, the pool that of drivers is probably, in my own simple mind, where we really should focus our attention and start, right? And again, there's no single silver bullet to any of this. There's 20 right things that need to be done, and it's going to require multiple parties, including the government, to consider, is it really required? Is an absolute hard requirement for it to be, 21 to get your CDL. Most carriers want you to have at least 2 years over the road driving experience. They're not showing up, at a Schneider or a Swift or a Hunt until they're 23 years old, right? And if you are 18, graduating from college or from high school, if you've made it through, you're going to have some very understanding parents that you're going to tell mom and dad, I need to play Xbox until I'm 21 in order to get my CDL, and then I got to get a training job at the local carrier, and then I'm going to go become a truck driver. Is that okay if I crash on the couch here and drink some Mountain Dew and play Xbox, right? So, I won't allow my 5.5-year-old to plan on that anytime soon, right? And you probably won't allow any of your kids to do either. So I think there's all sorts of problems that we're facing. That's one of the challenges in this industry. It's what makes it interesting, I think, for all of us that participate in it, and no easy answer. But I'm certain if we put our heads together collectively, we can come up with some offsetting strategies to allow the freight to ultimately still move, well beyond when you and I are no longer in the industry.
Yeah, no, great points. I think we could probably have a multiple episodes talking on just this very, very topic, as it is so, there's just a lot of factors, involved in this whole thing. I think at the end of the day, I think most shippers recognize that it is a risk factor. I think the where a lot of debate is, is it, how long term is it? And how acute is it? Right. And can we, find solutions, so such as the ideas that you kind of brought up there, whether they're technological solutions to some of these things or changes in policies and regulations that are ultimately going to, work their way to resolve this. I just remind, we're kind of getting short on time here. I just got a couple of more questions. I just want to remind those of you that are joining us live that if you do have a question for Matt, now would be the time to ask. So let's shift gears a little bit now, and we've talked about the market environment. We've talked about kind of the shipper's view, the carrier's view. I mean, is your role kind of as a logistics service provider changing as well in response to you know, what's happening in the transportation market? You know, in other words, are the types of services and help that shippers are coming to you for today, you know, differently than it was a few years ago?
Yeah, so I think, so the answer is yes. It varies from shipper to shipper, and the majority of the time we see, you know, we kind of start in one position with that shipper with a set of contracted services and aligned expectations in terms of what the outcome looks like. And over time, based on our ability to deliver the goods, pun intended, on behalf of the customer, you know, our relationship with them changes. It evolves. They start to look at us less as a supplier, more as a strategic partner, more as a content provider, right? So tell us, Transplace, what's happening with respect to the business and the industry, and what should we be doing in order to make certain that we remain, you know, out in front, if you will, with your direct assistance. So, you know, I can think of multiple examples where, you know, we started in one kind of very specific focused area with delivering a set of contracted services on behalf of that shipper under an agreement. And, you know, 5 years later, 8 years later, 10 years later, you know, we've kind of 180'd that position, if that makes sense. And, those are the best relationships without question, right? We have a lot of capabilities to bring to bear for a shipper in terms of, you know, in terms of it being our engineering services, our strategic carrier sourcing, our strategic carrier management, our Lean Six Sigma continuous improvement framework. There's lots of stuff that we can do, you know, once we ultimately have engaged, deployed, and stand up, you know, a solution and deliver against the originally, you know, the originally contracted, originally purchased, you know, expectations.
You know, one of my predictions for 2016 was that the 3PL value proposition was going to start to get flipped, right? So that instead of being logistics services enabled by technology, you know, what a lot of shippers are going to start looking for is what I called IT outsourcing and business intelligence visibility enabled by logistics services, which is kind of perhaps a fancy way of saying that the technology aspect of what 3PLs bring to the table is you know, coming into the forefront. Do you see that as well? I mean, I don't know if you agree that it will happen in 2016, but do you see that directionally as that happening?
Yeah, without question. Our customers continue to come to us. I can think of one as an example where we provide an outsourced service for them. We have just re-engineered our, you know, after hours call on call solution for them. So they have a large far flung network, and one of their customer you know, the service teams said, hey, you guys are adept at handling issues after hours. You know what I mean? Can we apply that model to something that might not be a transportation logistics specific requirement, and so I see our customers coming to us and saying, you know, hey, this is your guys' business. You know, what else can you do for me? That is, you know, think of it as almost tangential, right? In terms of what. But without question, you know, our chief technology officer continues to evaluate not only our technical platform and where it sits vis-a-vis the market, but also the emerging technology around us, right? I think we see our role as having, you know, a core technical platform that is key to our solution delivery. And then, you know, these other innovations that are coming around it, you know, how do we integrate those? How do we become, you know, if you will, a master assembler of those technologies in order to deliver the outcome that our customers are expecting, you know, year one, you know, year 12 and year 22, right? In terms of the span of our relationship with them.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think more and more when I talk to shippers and when I see, you know, what's happening on the 3PL front, you know, certainly the role of technology is changing and becoming, you know, a key differentiator and a must have, if you will, you know, to succeed in this market. You know, as we wrap up here, I mean, so kind of to build off the title of today's episode, I mean, when you take the long view of the transportation market, I mean, what do you see?
I see for the balance of 2016, I think that our consensus is you continue to see capacity exceed demand. So it will be a favorable market for the balance of this year. And, you know, as I look out my window here at 65 degrees, probably not mildly different than your window, Adrian, not far from me. You know, maybe we've made it through the winter at this point without, a set of snowageddons, right? So I think you'll continue to see a favorable market in 2016. 2017 will bring about an interesting time for us as a country. It will bring about an interesting time for us as an economy. I think it all comes back to the economy, growth, and then ultimately the inflow of available drivers and how that balance works out, right? I don't think that there is any easy near low-hanging fruit. You know, those shippers that have converted to intermodal, to use intermodal, that as it sits today are doing that. Railroads continue to invest aggressively in short-term and short-haul freight. You know, I mean, there are fringe opportunities, right? You know what I mean? But none of which are going to fully meet the requirement if we start to see an economy that grows at, you know, 3%+, you know, annually. We'll run headlong back into a constrained market from a transportation standpoint. That's not to say that carriers don't want to put, you know, road trucks and seat drivers. That's not saying that the manufacturers don't want to build trucks and trailers. All those things exist. The challenge will be is, where do we get the labor that ultimately is the linchpin to all of this that want to drive those trucks?
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. I think ultimately economic growth is going to be one of the critical factors that's going to determine kind of the what's going to happen in the years ahead. And, you know, like you kind of alluded to, you know, with the presidential election and a lot of uncertainty there and a variety of different ideas and viewpoints towards global trade versus other aspects of the economy. I think it's anybody's guess in terms of what the road ahead lies, but certainly keeping a pulse on that is important. So we're kind of short on time here, so I'm just going to go right to my last question, Matthew. So as kind of a way to wrap up, I mean, what questions should shippers ask themselves to assess whether, you know, they're on the right path, right, to achieving transportation success, not only kind of in the days and weeks ahead, but, you know, truly for the long term?
So I think our most I would say have a strategic plan and vision for what you want your transportation to be 3 to 5 years forward. Our most savvy customers take a long view, not only from a, you know, current rate contracting situation, but, you know, have they developed the right relationships with the right carriers? One of our customers is probably the most adept at understanding, you know, the underpinnings of the carriers that they partner with, their finances, their ownership structure, their succession planning. I mean, they've taken the game to another level, right? And that's a function of many things, but that is a function of the savviness of that shipper and the crucial nature in which that transportation plays with respect to their product getting to market, right? And them ultimately, you know, booking sales and aligning with their shareholders' expectations, right? So take a long view, 3 to 5 year plan, you know, who you're going to partner with, how are you going to partner with them, and then bring them in and make certain that there's organizational alignment from top to bottom that, you know, are we the right to be partnering at this point? And then I think at that point, to your point of earlier, you know, that's when the candid dialogue starts, right? So how can we help you be more successful? How can we help you grow your business? And how can we help, you know, and how can you help us moderate our expense, moderate our costs as a shipper that owns a budget? So.
Great, great perspective there. And I think, you know, as you were talking there, you know, it struck me, particularly part of the long-term view is really taking a risk management lens, you know, to it as well, because, you know, as I've been saying over the past few years, you know, so much of supply chain management today is about risk management, and that's certainly true, you know, when it comes to transportation as well. Well, Matthew, you know, like I always say at the end of all our episodes, you know, we always just manage to scratch the surface, you know, in the short time we have together. But I think we hit upon a lot of, you know, key points that are certainly top of mind for a lot of transportation executives, you know, across a variety of industries. So thank you again for making the time to, you know, share your thoughts and perspectives on what's happening in the market.
Thanks so much, Adrian. It's been a lot of fun. Greatly appreciate the opportunity.
I want to thank those of you that joined us live today. We didn't get any questions live, but if you are watching this episode on demand and you've got a question for Matthew, you can find the episode on talkinglogistics.com and post a question or a comment there. And I'm sure Matthew will be more than happy to respond via that medium. Again, thank you all for joining us today and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.
Thanks, Adrian.